If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And welcome, one and all, to the HP Podcast, episode number 252. We're getting old. Dave is here with me today, repping Puma, one of our corporate sponsors. Thank you to Puma for sponsoring the show. That's not a real ad. Dave, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Tell me how the negotiations went with Puma in your most recent acquisition talks.
The negotiations were short. Yeah, I bought two Puma shirts on the weekend, $10 a pop from Winners, which I think is like your Marshalls.
Okay, yeah.
So they have like a bunch of like surplus designer brands or whatever.
Yeah, or something like that.
Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong.
Well, you could go wrong. You didn't get the sponsorship deal.
I mean, in terms of buying clothes, it's difficult to go wrong at Winners and or Marshalls. So,
yeah. Understood. Well, good to see you. Glad to see you're very bright and illuminated, and that has been rectified. Brandon, coming to us from a familiar yet unfamiliar location.
I'm doing all right today, Ben. The chat's saying, holy shit, Brandon finally killed Dustin. That's not the case this time. I'm in the process of moving.
Next time.
And yeah. So Dustin was kind enough to lend me the studio to kind of ease the transition period until I get reset up. So very grateful to him for allowing me this space. He's got a much, much nicer setup than me. I'm not jealous. I'm just observing.
You don't have your like that chair where you can like recline in it and have the screens above you. Like that's what your new setup's going to be, right? Like a whole, just like a backwards racing the rig or something.
Kind of, yeah.
The leg straps and stuff that attach to the roof.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Wait, the leg
there
straps?
There is all in due time. I gotta find a couple structural supports, Dave, before I can, you know, some beams before I can kind of...
He called it the cockpit, yeah, so I don't know.
Something's going on. Yeah.
Brandon, how many titular statues are there near you right now that you could I may not be you? A...
Can you yeah, I mean... Higher than I can count, I'd say. You can't beat it, boys. I'm just glad to be back. It's been a couple weeks. Not the usual scenery, but nonetheless, glad to be here with the boys and glad to be here with Chad. So,
well, it's kind of a throwback. For those who don't know, I think probably most people who listen or have listened for a while know, probably the first 240 episodes before we went like to being live and doing this remotely, of the first 240 episodes, I'd say 237 of them, 235 maybe, were filmed or were recorded in that room. Of course, Dave was remote for maybe all but one of those. But
I have been in that room, though.
He has been in that room. He slept in that room, I think.
Yeah.
So that room, it's really just a beckoning home for the HP Podcast, honestly.
Only the OGs remember.
It's a pretty sweet room. Now, I was in there before all the titular statues, but it was still pretty cool then. So
you wouldn't have been able to contain yourself with that sort of thing around. So
wouldn't be on the show if those statues at
that time. Dustin sometimes says he's not a weeb or not a real weeb. And I'm like, have you seen your room? Have you? Like, just have you? What have you watched for the entire last 2 years? Explain
sometimes
these things
you just
got to
lay out the bullet points and kind of make your own call and that sort of thing, man.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of making your own call, you can make your own call on whether you want to help support us financially or not by going over to patreon.com/handsomephantom. We appreciate it if you want to join us there. It's as little as a dollar a month If you're an audio listener, you get ad-free early access to the show. For the video folk, well, I guess you get whatever YouTube wants you to get. But we appreciate you guys who support us there on Patreon. And also, if you want to hang out with us, whether you're a patron or not, you can do so over at handsomephantom.com/discord there. Hang out, talk about new games, talk about stuff you're doing that weekend, talk about how you're going to rage at Mario Wonder, which I will participate in later in the show. And
Discord also, is gross this week.
There's a lot of feet stuff going on. There's a lot of just... Dave, we need to address this.
Price shopping Big Ten statues. Yeah. I was very disappointed in the chat and how quickly they honestly answered that question, which was a joke, by the way.
I forget what it was. Oh, you asked if it was like a real statue or something?
Yes, Dustin specifically. And the amount of actual answers I got in a very short period of time was a little discouraging. But yeah. Degenerates we are, that's okay.
Yeah. I also wanted to point out that you posted a picture of one of your acquisitions this week.
Yeah.
Not the Puma acquisition, Mario Wonder. And I got the feeling there was an intentional shot of one.
How
of your
convenient.
Feet
there.
No, it wasn't intentional. I've already had a meeting with the Handsome Phantom HR department on this, so I've been read my rights and all that.
Your Miranda rights. Yeah. Yeah.
Won't happen again, sir, but it wasn't intentional.
I wouldn't make any promises, Dave. Yeah. I really wouldn't on camera. I would not make any promises. I'm not your lawyer, of course, but
you guys have both gotten yourselves in trouble by making promises on camera recently. Yeah.
When will we learn that our actions have consequences?
That's right. Guys, you want to talk about some news? Some video game news? By the way, this is a video game news show most of the time. Most of the time.
Can I just say, Ben?
Okay.
As an advocate of digital gaming, like this sort of thing wouldn't happen because I can't take a picture of a digital game.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, there's another mark in the digital game column is you don't get accidental feet pics with digital games. So.
That could be a positive for some people and a negative for
many
others.
All I'm saying is if you try hard enough, you could have been holding the Switch up and being like, oh, look at my new game on the screen. I'm just saying. The feet can persist, digital or not, Dave. So don't think it's mutually exclusive here. This isn't a physical digital world as far as feet are concerned. They are one.
I'm just glad you had pants on.
Well, speak for yourself.
Number one. Naughty Dog has announced The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered for PlayStation 5. Set to be released on January 19th, 2024, this edition will include a new roguelike survival mode called No Return, a guitar free play mode, and a comprehensive dive behind the scenes with director's commentary and newly recorded insights. The game will feature enhanced graphics, including native 4K output in fidelity mode, and an unlocked frame rate option. The remastered version will leverage PS5 features, like improved loading times and DualSense controller capabilities. Existing PS4 owners can upgrade to the digital version of the PS5 remastered version for $10 at launch. Boys, I wanted to talk about this. We've talked about a lot of these like remakes, remasters, milking us for all they're worth kind of thing. But the biggest thing for me with The Last of Us Part 2 is that there was a PS5 patch that added in, and it was free, by the way, most of the features that they're bringing with this. Now, granted, that new mode, we'll talk about that. That's a selling point. I think for sure. But it seems like the rest of it. I guess what I'm saying is, Dave, is this for us who already have The Last of Us Part 2? We don't need a new one. Or is this really just to get the new audience in the door with the success of the TV show, make a little extra money for people who are diehard, etc.?
Yeah, I think the simple answer is there is an opportunity for Sony to bring in a bunch of people who've had an interest in the show and maybe haven't played the game or bought a system or something like that. But I mean, as mentioned in the chat there, like we've also seen this with Death Stranding and Ghost of Tsushima. So I think this is kind of a larger overarching cash grab strategy, this whole $10 re-release thing. My big issue with this is, again, it's a 3.5-year-old game, or it will be in January when this comes out. And this is being positioned as a remaster. Whereas with Ghost of Tsushima, and I believe with Death Stranding, it was just sort of a next gen upgrade because those games came out in kind of an awkward in between time just before the PS5 came out. So Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying anything new or groundbreaking by saying that I don't like this, and I really wish that Naughty Dog and Sony first party were kind of focusing on you know, newer stuff than doing this, because it's nothing new. And as you said, Ben, a lot of this stuff is already out there. Also, like, how do we have two unnecessary remasters for The Last of Us franchise and nothing for Bloodborne? I understand there's a difference in relationship when it comes to like Naughty Dog and From, but still, it's just I don't know. It's not cool. And the other thing that really gets me is like, there's probably a lot of people out there who maybe they pre-ordered The Last of Us Part 2 for when it first came out, or they bought it at launch, like with the expectation that they're getting this really good campaign plus Factions. And obviously we know since then Factions is basically dead or essentially on ice. But we are getting this roguelike mode, which is cool. But at the same time, like, if you want that now and you have the PS4 version, you have to pay more for it. I know it's only $10, but the principle is it just kind of sucks. And we're seeing a lot of these shitty moves from Sony. If these things are paying off for Sony, then unfortunately, I think they're going to live on past the Jim Ryan era. I don't know if it's all him, but in any case, this is kind of annoying. And yeah, just give us a Bloodborne remaster. That would be cool.
Brandon, your thoughts? Who's this for? Why are they doing this? Yeah,
I mean,
are you upset about Factions? And in fairness, I will say real quick before you go, they did announce that Factions would not be coming with Part 2 before you had to pay money for it. But they still led you. I mean, the marketing before that was that Factions was going to be part of it, and now it's not.
Right.
So,
I kind of feel two different ways about this. I've been thinking about it for a couple of days now. And ultimately, I don't think it's that big of a deal what they're doing. And I think that why wouldn't they do something like this when they had such success with the last upgrade? And the last upgrade, much more extensive. I understand that. But I think a $10 price tag, really, for people who are diehards of the series, there is value there. And I don't think that they wasted too many resources trying to put this thing together. I mean, they made it look better. They added a couple more features, and all the extra content probably was already bagged in some fashion or another. Like,
yeah,
for Sony, I feel like this really is a win-win. I don't know that it's a win-win for the consumer, but you know, obviously they're going to charge $70 for it. It's a new version of the game. Whether you want to, you know, whether it's the same game that came out years ago or not, it's like, in no reality would they have charged less money for that. That would have set a precedent that nobody else would want to keep. So I get why they're doing this. And I guess I'm glad it is only $10. All in all, yeah, it's like two really expensive cups of coffee. And like, if you loved the game and you got some extra stuff, I think most people won't even care about it looking a little bit better, because it's a nominal difference. But a couple of...
Yeah, it can't be that much, especially from the upgrade that they already put out.
Right. So, you know, it being a tweaked version of the game, you getting a little bit of extra content, maybe you could fuck around with a guitar. That won't mean much to most people, but I do think it's notable that this is probably not for the people mostly that already own the game. I would say for the most part. And the value that the people that do own the game get is that it's only $10. Now, we could argue whether that's shitty or not, but to me, that I would like it to be free. That's not the way these companies work. You know what I mean? They put something into this and they want some return. And, you know, even though that's not the most consumer friendly thing, I get it and think it could honestly have been a lot worse. So I'm not going to do
for
it
me,
is what I'm saying. I'm not doing it, but you know, there's a lot of people that will.
You're not going to go for the $10 upgrade even?
Probably not. No.
Yeah. For me, I played the first Last of Us 3 times, I think. The Last of Us 1, not Part 1, the first Last of Us. And I've only played The Last of Us 2 one time. And I thought that I would probably never play it again. Not because I didn't like it, just because it was everything I needed to be. And that was, I was done. And it was 30 hours long, which was too long for me. But I think just for the experience, whatever this no return is going to be, it's a roguelike survival mode. I feel like if I buy it, the upgrade for $10 just for that mode and play it for a couple times, it's probably worth it for a Last of Us spinoff, essentially. I definitely won't be buying a full new disc or whatever for, you know, $70 or whatever they end up making it. But buying the digital upgrade just for that extra mode, I'll probably go for it unless it comes out and it's doo-doo. But yeah, I think you're right. It's mainly a win for PlayStation because obviously you can get this for PS4 and it will play on your PS5 with a PS5 patch for $20-$30 if you buy it physically, and probably a little more than that digitally, unless it's on sale, which it usually is. But I don't think it's a really good deal for consumers. I think this is meant for people who are coming in for the first time off the TV show or whatever. Or just like we said with part one, it is for whenever they do the inevitable PS5 or PC release, because that's a huge market. They haven't experienced it. And of course, why wouldn't you put it out on PS5 as well, since you're already making it for PC? So let's go over to the chat here and see what a few people are saying here. Shout out to, Dave already kind of commented on this one, but shout out to Spider-Man 2018, Tsushima, and Death Stranding getting remasters in a shorter time frame. I think Spider-Man was a remaster. Were Tsushima and Death Stranding, I think they were like PS5 editions.
They were, I don't know. Again, it was a positioning thing. They felt like upgrades rather than this is a remaster.
Right. I know Tsushima, the upgrade, there was a PS5 upgrade, and then there was a PS5 version, but I think it was basically the PS5 upgrade for people who already had
and
it.
They
I
don't had remember for sure. Like DLC with that too, which made it, I think, a little bit more valuable.
Tsushima or Death Stranding did?
Icky Island for Tsushima.
Icky Island cost extra. Oh, that's right. You mean
with right, the PS5 but I mean version. In terms yeah, of yeah, the yeah. overall package.
Yes, that's true. That's yeah, that makes it more valuable, I guess. And especially for people who know, that was a sleeper hit, in my opinion. I was not looking forward to that game at all. And like 2 days after it came out, I could not stand it because Brandon and another friend of ours were talking so highly about it, I had to get it. And then I loved it. I ended up spending like 70 hours on it, platinuming it, playing the multiplayer. Yeah, it was, man, I'd love to go back to Tsushima, but I'm thinking I'm just going to wait until the next one's announced and then go back, play the DLC, etc. Ed says, where we landed on boys, the disc version is going to be $70, yay or nay. I'm saying yes as well.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Probably $70.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, I just don't. Yeah, there's no way.
Do we know what the original remaster came at?
It was either 60 or 70. I think it was 70.
It will be no less. It will be no less than 60, which is just like, you know, 10 extra dollars at that point. I'm like,
I was guessing 50, but we'll see.
Yeah. Somebody in chat can correct us. Radic says $60 for part one. So I would not think they're going to charge less for this one, although it is a 7-year newer remaster this time. So Bloodborne remaster is only happening if they have a movie or TV show in the works. Yep, that's probably true.
Make it happen, Netflix. I don't know.
Radic also says this will get a PC release. Yep, absolutely. The Last of Us 2 PS5 is a pointless as Ghost of Tsushima DC, except Naughty Dog has negative goodwill compared to Sucker Punch having launched a free multiplayer suit for Ghost. Yeah, it's pointless for us. I think for the wider industry, it's probably got a purpose. A few more here. This is quite the hot topic. As always, The Last of Us always brings out the venom. The $10 upgrade isn't a bad deal for Mercenaries type mode. Get your RE fix in the TLOU universe. Smart choice to copy it. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Another. Tsushima had a few settings extra. You could buy it and upgrade to Director's Cut without the DLC. Death Stranding Director's Cut has a $10 upgrade for everything, PS5 version and content. I never really buy into the upgraded editions. I never have too much, but unless they're free, then I'll check them out. I was so excited for the Tsushima upgrade, and then I hopped into it, saw how pretty it was, and then quit. Never went back to it again. All right. One more clarification. $60 for The Last of Us Remastered on PS4. $70 for The Last of Us Part 1 on PS5. So I don't know what's right or not, but I'm guaranteeing it won't be less than Part 1 was for the remaster. So you guys ready to move on?
Let's do it.
We done talking about The Last of Us, hopefully forever.
Yep.
Until the next one. Number two, Larian Studios is set to release a physical multi-platform edition of Baldur's Gate 3 outside of Japan in early 2024. Priced at $80 US, the limited disc-based versions will be available for PS5, PC, and Xbox Series. The console versions will span multiple discs, two for PS5, three for Xbox, while the PC version will include a single disc with a downloader app. These physical editions also come with extras, such as a three-disc soundtrack. Despite the game's digital success, the decision for a physical release comes relatively quickly after the digital launch on PS5 in August. Brandon, I want to go to you first on this, since you and I are the Baldur's Gate bros. I think it's really interesting that in this, everything's moving digital. This game is a giant success. It sells millions and millions of copies without needing a physical edition. People like us, yeah, we like physical, but we bought it on PC, so we're used to not having physical, etc. But now, several months after the PC launch and about a month and a half or so after the PS5 launch, we're hearing we're going to put out a physical edition for everybody. What does that say? Is that more about desire for it, or is that something to do with industry trends? Is there demand then?
I think there has to be demand. And I think something that Baldur's Gate can do that a lot of other games cannot is, I think Baldur's Gate, to me, and I think to a lot of people, at least, you know, based on the nominations this year at the Game Awards, it's one of those games that is almost like a once in a span of many years type of game. It's like an outlier. It's like the lightning in the bottle type of game. And they know that this is something that even people who have casually passed by it, or maybe even people that own it, would even be tempted to kind of buy it again. Because when you have something that's of this high of a quality and that is this much of a trailblazer in a lot of ways, I would say, I think that people see the value in physically owning it. It's like something more. Like, I would, if Baldur's Gate 3 launched at $160, I would have paid for it then, which is the whole point. I would be willing to pay for it twice. So I think that this is just another added value for people who haven't bought in yet. And I think that there also is a big market for people who realize how monumental this game will be and how it will be talked about for years and years. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, that's something where I'm like, I want more. And the value in the set you get here is actually pretty amazing compared to some other games that have come out recently. I mean, what they're offering with it. Now, you know, I'm not going to buy a special edition for everything else aside from the game, but, you know, it certainly doesn't hurt that there's a lot of cool shit with it as well. So,
yeah. Dave, I know you haven't played Baldur's Gate and you're not the physical guy, but what do you think of this move to, you know, after release and saying there would be no physical copy, put out a physical copy?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing with this game is, given how well it was received, I think what I read was they've sold over 22 million copies, and I wouldn't be surprised if they sold another 22 million physical copies, because that's how much people love this game and they would double dip. But I don't know. There's two ways to look at this. In one case, maybe Larian misread the market slightly and didn't really think that the game would be this much of a hit, and it wasn't worth going to physical release. The other way to look at it is, maybe Larian did know, or you know, they were confident in their release, and they thought, let's initially release this digitally, where, you know, we're going to make a little bit more per unit, which it may just be a nominal amount, but you multiply that by 22 million and the extra revenue on selling a digital copy versus a physical is a lot more. So maybe that's the strategy, and maybe we'll see more of this going forward, where an initial release is digital, get all the early adopters to buy digital, and then have a follow-up release physical. Again, I don't think we're realistically going to see this with too many games, but maybe that was the approach, is let's make all of our money on digital, and then put that physical out later for those who want it as the collector's piece or the late adopters or whatever it might be. But yeah, it's an interesting situation. I suspect that it's probably the latter there, where Larry knows what they're doing, and they knew they were going to sell a lot on PC, and thus they went digital only. So yeah, it's a good package, though. I agree with you, Brandon. It's really good.
Yeah. It is interesting. There's some comments in chat. One, let's see. Baldur's Gate being digital wasn't a shock, considering that the devs weren't even sure how the game would be received. No point in investing in a physical release. I think I agree with that to some extent, but this game was in early access for so long and sold millions of early access copies that it's, for at least on PC, that it is hard for me to imagine they did not know that it was going to be a big game. But yeah, I mean,
we were at PAX too when it was first shown off. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think it was the most popular game at that show. Like, it was the big draw. So
Ed has a question about the disc sizes. I don't want to get into that as much because I don't have all the details, but he says the Xbox copy is weird at 3 disc and the Series X uses 100 gig UHD, et cetera, et cetera. So the point there is the Xbox edition, if I'm remembering correctly, is going to be 3 discs. Did I write that here? Yes. Two discs for PS5, 3 for Xbox, which I think the Xbox format is a little bit smaller, so they need more discs for it. And then the PC version is going to be a single disc that presumably the disc will just unlock the download or come with a code or something along those lines. So that's interesting. It is. This is a game I want to play mostly on PC. That's where I've played it so far. I might end up buying a PS5 copy if there's availability once it drops in price eventually, but maybe it won't be since, you know, we'll get into that too. But it is interesting that even though it's a physical edition, it's still going to be a digital edition because it's just unlocking it, which is the way a lot of games go now. So is there anything else physical with this, though? It looks like it's just it's coming with extras, but like a 3-disc soundtrack. I don't know if that's physical or digital. I don't know who wants a 3 CDs for a soundtrack these days anyway, because I don't even know anybody with a CD player, but I don't know. I didn't see where else, what else was coming with it, but I don't even have a disc drive in my PC. I took it out to make space for my graphics card because it didn't have enough room. So I just got an empty hole in the front of my computer. So, but yeah, it's all really interesting. Curious to see which version of the game, how many patches they'll have on there, etc. But I think it's good for people who want a copy. I think some people are probably feeling jaded because they already bought it digitally, because that was going to be the only way to buy it. And some of those people, including some of us, may have opted for the physical version. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Bonehead, brain dead, digital only, ass backward thinking. I should fist fight Phil Spencer and bring brass knuckles. Okay. That's a little extreme.
Sounds like a Sony Pony mentality right there.
That's definitely a Sony Pony mentality. Ed says, if I'm not mistaken, Xbox was selling Series X and S games on a single disc, and you basically needed a Series X update, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, a little discussion in the chat about what format is used and why it's going to be that difference. I'm just curious to see how many cartridges the Switch version will be on. Dave, any insight there for us?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I pulled up my headphone for a second.
I said, I'm just curious to see how many cartridges it's going to take for the Switch edition.
I was just going to say, I'm holding out for that. Yeah. I've been saying Baldur's Gate on Switch that's the native platform. That's where it's
at. the new wave.
It's going to be your only game on there, so I hope you like it.
And you're going to have to switch SD cards. Like, every time you get into a fight, new SD card.
In between loading screens.
You're going to have to hook up like a diesel generator to it just to power it. Oh. Yeah.
All right, moving on. One of our favorite studios to talk about, or favorite publishers to talk about, Annapurna Interactive, has acquired the South African studio 24-Bit Games. The deal aims to assist 24-Bit Games in expanding its development team. The South African studio has previously engaged in porting and co-development work for both indie and AAA studios. Notable collaborations between Annapurna and 24-Bit Games include titles such as Neon White and Cocoon. The acquisition signifies Annapurna's commitment to quality and its anticipation of growth and expansion opportunities with 24-Bit Games. The financial details of the deal have not been disclosed. Brandon, we'll hop over to you first. Neon White, you know, I was the champion, but everybody forgot that by the time it became popular. You know, I'm not gonna hold that against anyone, but this developer, I've been hearing great things about Cocoon, especially in our Discord, by the way, handsomephantom.com/discord to join up on the Discord. I've been hearing great things about this Cocoon game. I have it downloaded. I have not checked it out yet on Game Pass, but anyway, What are your thoughts on Annapurna making their first acquisition, getting their own
developer? Yeah, this is fantastic. Not only are they acquiring a studio, which I have had some experience with and I've heard nothing but good things, but as we've said, Annapurna, we have a good relationship with them. At every single PAX we've been to, we've played, I think we've almost played every single game, if not every single game that they have at their booth every single time.
They used to hunt us down and ask us.
And I'm not mad about it. Yeah. Their games are good. I like them. They have amazing art style. And clearly, I've said this for years on the show, is that they have a vision of what they want and they very rarely miss. Now, I'm not saying we get 10 out of 10 experiences every time, but we got a quality studio here. And I'm glad to see that they picked up some other notable talent. This is a win-win. This is truly a win-win. And in a world of acquisitions that are, I don't want to say discouraging, but something that I think could be maniacal or evil at some point or be a net negative for society or, you know, us. This is positive, and I'm really, really,
we do,
unfortunately. And from what I've been told, live in a society. This is a net positive for everyone, I think, including Annapurna, just holding out for Neon White 2 and have Cocoon downloaded. I'm not sure if I'll like it, but I was considering trying it out. So,
yeah, I was seeing some buzz about it, and then some people in the Discord whose opinions I don't hate. You know, I'm not gonna say value because I don't want to give them more credibility, but that I at least don't hate. said that it was awesome. So
that's definitely a glowing compliment coming from Ben. I don't hate you.
I didn't say I didn't hate them. I said I didn't hate their opinions on video games. There's a major difference.
That's actually
there.
Pretty good. Okay. You guys should run with that. Whoever that is, run with that, because that's
Put that on your resume right now.
Just change your name in Discord to Ben doesn't hate my game opinions.
Your LinkedIn headline is Ben doesn't hate me.
Yeah. Yeah. I will put community notes on that, though, just to make sure you know that it's not you. It's the game opinions that you have. Yeah, I'm excited. Dave, you've been a big fan of Annapurna published games as well. And I don't know if you got a chance to check out Cocoon or Neon White, but I would recommend at least Neon White highly to anybody who likes fast-paced, well, just fast-paced run-and-gun kind of games. It's a lot of fun.
I think after all the chat about Cocoon this weekend on the Discord, I checked it out and it definitely looks a little bit more up my alley. But yeah, 24-bit games, this is interesting. And I kind of suspect that maybe 24-bit has had a little bit more involvement in these games than just porting and developing. Both of these games were very positively received, and 24-bit games on their website actually has other pretty high profile Annapurna games listed as games they've worked on, including Maquette, 12 Minutes, and Broforce.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, this they've had, you know, a long relationship with Annapurna. Whatever their first solo project, with project that they are accountable for primarily, I think whatever it is going to be pretty high profile in terms of Annapurna stuff. So looking forward to that for sure.
It looks like they worked on Gone Home and Tacoma as well. Heave Ho, that was a big one. It didn't really strike a chord with me, but it was definitely a hit. So they've apparently been working with Annapurna for a long time, but specifically on these couple games. So
I was sure when I was going to see the Pathless on there, but it wasn't.
The Pathless is maybe one of the most overlooked hits, the most overlooked quality games of the PS5 generation. I really think that game is special, and I can't explain why other than that, like, when I played it, I felt like I've never experienced Zen or whatever kind of new age bullshit that is. But if I've ever been anywhere close, that was it. To feeling at one with the world, I guess you could say. So Annapurna, amazing publisher. They almost never miss. And then 24-bit seems to be a major win in my book. And yes, Brandon, in a world of discouraging acquisitions and layoffs and everything else, I think this is a good one. Because if you can provide a small studio like this, getting firepower from a small publisher that has nothing but quality. Amazing. Amazing. Comments in chat. Cocoon rules. That's good to hear. Annapurna was founded by former Sony Santa Monica devs who worked on the XDev team. They assisted games like Journey, Unfinished Swan, etc. Nice. I did not know about that. As far as Annapurna, yeah, I feel like I did remember that, but it looks like a Radek wrote that like a ChatGPT response somehow. I don't know.
Copy and paste that from Wikipedia. But it's funny, Journey makes a lot of sense when you look at games like The Pathless and Cocoon and stuff like that. Like, you really see those kind of parallels and inspirations. So
for sure. Yeah. Cool. Moving on, one of my favorite topics, and I know Brandon's in love with this one as well. The Nier series, created by Yoko Taro, is confirmed to continue as long as Yoko Taro is involved. The announcement was made during a presentation at the South Korean G-Star Conference by producer Yosuke Sato. I think I pronounced that correctly. I'm not good with Asian pronunciations. Who pledged the series continuation as long as Yoko Taro is, quote, alive and kicking. While no concrete details about future projects were shared, Sato hinted at an unannounced collaboration between the two with hopes to reveal more next year. Brandon, I got to go to you first. One of your favorite games of all time, Nier Automata. You know, the creator of that, Yoko Taro, says it sounds like there's going to be more as long as he's alive. Please do not assassinate him, Brandon.
Don't sign me up for anything, Ben. Don't put these thoughts in my head. Now, this is good, man. Honestly, I give Nier a lot of shit, and that's mostly because everybody circle jerks around it in a propeller fashion. but it's a good game. I played a couple endings. I don't know why I didn't stick with it. I enjoyed the time I had, and I think that it has a very high mark of quality. I especially appreciated the soundtrack. Was 10 out of 10 as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm hopeful for my relationship with Nier in the future, because I feel like it was a hair away from being something I would love. So as the series develops more, who knows? Maybe I'll go back. Maybe I'll like the next one better. Maybe the combat will be better, but it's not.
Yeah, that's a shame that you think that. Dave, we talked a little while back about you checking out Nier Automata, and you didn't. And I want to know what the hell's wrong with you.
I'm scared of that game.
You should be.
but also, I'm kind of confused now. So, like, if I were to want to get into the series, and I'm not expecting to play a game and know all of the lore, kind of getting right into it, but like, where do I start? Like, is Automata a good start, or is, like, I know Replicant was like a remake of a game that actually came out before Automata, and I know there's Drakengard and Gestalt, and that, I guess that's a little bit too obscure, but where do I start, Ben?
I'm going to give you my experience, because everybody's experience with this is a little different, and some people, maybe even a person in our chat, is a freak and will try to convince you of something. I have no idea what it will be, but I'll give you my experience. The first game I played was Nier Automata. It was recommended to me highly by our buddy Dustin, and that's where I started. Then after that, I went and played Replicant. And I played the remake or the remaster, whatever it ended up being. I can't exactly remember. And they added some of their content. And it illuminated many more things prior to Automata that, like, oh, wow, this is how that happened. This made sense. Because I have never played them in the reverse order, obviously. I didn't play Replicant first. It's hard for me to say whether that would be more impactful or less. I felt like getting the background on that stuff after I played it was incredibly illuminating. But I think for someone who maybe played them in a different order, that would be different. The very first game in the series, I never have touched. I don't even know that I've seen anything of it. I'm one of those guys who have gone back. I'm not usually this person, but for Nier specifically, I went back and like read a bunch of stuff. I ordered all the graphic novels and the books and the short stories and everything else and read all those. But that was all after the experience. So I think you could easily start with Automata, because I do think that is the best game of the three, personally. The three or four or five, depending on how you want to look at it. But I think that's the best one. And if you love that game enough, if you like that game, it will be easy to go back to the other games that I feel are lesser. A little more grindy, a little worse combat, which I know Brandon thinks Automata's combat is bad. I don't. I think it's really good. But I'd say Automata. But if you wanted to, you could start with Replicant, but I don't think that they are, I don't think that Replicant gives you a really good feel of what Automata is actually like. They're very different, but if the lore means something to you, then you'll want to go back to Replicant. That's just my opinion.
Fair enough.
In chat, Ed says, you can do either Automata or Replicant. You do not need to play Drakengard. The only two games in the series you should play in any order is Automata or Replicant. Yeah, that's pretty much my basic opinion as well. But I definitely think, knowing your playstyle and your games and how you like games, and also the length of these games, I think Automata is a solid start. And if you never go back to Replicant, you're still fine. If you start with Replicant and never see Automata, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. But again, just my opinion. Also, Brandon's kicked off the show. He didn't say this on the show, but the other night he said, well, he did just say it a minute ago, but the other night he said something about, I'm sorry that Automata's combat is ass. And I honestly wanted to throw a chair at him when he said that.
I also just like getting you guys riled up. But it is ass.
So. There you go. I think you were also maybe mildly intoxicated when you said it.
No.
So I can't really speak to whether or not you were
straight as an arrow tonight, and I say the same thing again. Fuck you.
Fair enough. All right, moving on. I originally had these as two separate stories, and they still are, but I'm just going to read them together. Amazon Games is laying off 180 employees, primarily affecting its Prime-related offerings. The Crown Channel team responsible for organizing game-related events on Twitch has been disbanded. The layoffs extend to Amazon's Game Growth Initiative, designed to help publishers promote titles. Chris Hartman, VP of Amazon Games, communicated the decision in an email, emphasizing a refocus on Prime Gaming, which will prioritize delivering free games each month. Despite the layoffs, Amazon Games remains focused on upcoming releases like Throne and Liberty, Blue Protocol, Tomb Raider, and Lord of the Rings games, which they're publishing most of those. And then moving on in, just to more layoffs, the Embracer Group, facing negative results and the fallout from a failed deal, has laid off 900 developers, resulting in studio closures and dismissals. Volition, the studio behind Saints Row, has shut down completely, and Crystal Dynamics, known for Tomb Raider, laid off 10% of its workforce. Rumors are still suggesting, I don't think this has been confirmed, that Free Radical Design has been closed, impacting the new Time Splitters project. Despite challenges, Dead Island 2 is profitable, and Payday 3, despite a troubled launch, is already making a profit. The CEO emphasized the difficulty of such decisions, and of course, he expressed gratitude to those departing. So, Dave, we got a couple different companies here doing different things, but laying people off. I don't know, take this in any way you would like.
Yeah, I find the Embracer thing kind of interesting, especially with the failed deal that it refers to there. I did a little bit more reading on that. I don't know if we talked about this, but I guess this went down in the summer. But Embracer had, I guess, a deal in theory worked out with a company called the Savvy Group that was backed by the Saudi Public Investment Fund, so Saudi money, that it was apparently worth like $2 billion or some ridiculous amount of money. And apparently this group had already given Embracer like $1 billion in acquisition money. So I'm kind of wondering like if Embracer got a little bit ahead of themselves with some of these acquisitions, and because some money had already changed hands, they had started gobbling up some developers. And then of course, when this deal fell through, suddenly that future capital isn't going to be there. So I don't know what's really going on at Embracer Group or why this deal fell through or what the implications would have been long term, but it's there's some questionable sort of investment practices that seem to be coming through the video game industry. So too bad, obviously, for people who have lost their jobs. And I hope that we don't start to see beloved franchise kind of go on ice because of investment, you know, practices like this. But yeah, I don't know. I really want another Tomb Raider. I do, because they're really good games. And I hope, you know, they don't get put out for too long because of stuff like this. So, yeah.
Brandon, I think it was really, I don't want to say obvious, but it was really eye-opening when every week we were discussing a new Embracer acquisition. And, you know, some of them were great and some of them were mid-developers. And we look at it and we were like, well, how are they going to keep doing this? Well, now we know they weren't going to keep doing this. And we talked about the Saudi thing. Might have been one of the few weeks that Dave wasn't here, but that whole deal falling through, obviously, not great, but also like, I don't know. Do you put all your egg? Do you buy a bunch of shit just expecting that you're going to get a big cash injection? I don't know if that's a smart move. Yeah. Are we going to see them totally collapse? I mean,
part of me wants, well, actually most of me wants that to happen, but not for the people involved, for the company's sake. But yeah, I mean, it was something that we really should have seen coming, and everybody being gobbled up by Embracer should have seen this coming. I mean, you just cannot sustain that large of an intake of both money and talent and just keep it going. I mean, I don't think any company could have done it, let alone, you know, backed by Saudi money or otherwise. So another sad story. Amazon doesn't seem to be hit as bad. I find it interesting because I feel like even if the games aren't making as much money, there could have probably been cuts in other places because they make profits through the roof. So I think that might be a little insight to Amazon's gaming presence in general, is that it is underperforming in some way. And the best way to remedy that is to make cuts, even if they're making money everywhere else. So I guess we're having two giants kind of hurting because they inflated too much. So yeah, it sucks, especially the numbers. I mean, what would you say, 900 some people from the one alone? That hurts quite a bit. So doesn't get any easier anytime we talk about it. But, you know, it really is important to understand the market. And I think this year will genuinely change not only how we view this sort of thing going forward, but how people in the industry decide to position themselves. Because it doesn't seem like many people are safe, especially with these giants. So,
yeah, it's interesting because at multiple points in the last couple of years, I wasn't like hardcore looking for a job or something, but I saw listings that appealed to me at both Amazon Games, and I know someone who's there who's kind of a high up person that I've thought I could reach out to this person, and decided not to explore it ultimately. And then there was a position with, I can't remember who it was now, but somebody who's owned by Embracer. And I'm just thinking now, like, well, I'm glad, I don't know that I would have gotten the jobs, but I'm glad I didn't apply because who knows, like, right, they could have been chopped. But one thing I wanted to bring up was specifically with Amazon. It's really interesting. Obviously they've had a couple hits. New World is still a decent sized game. I think there's still quite a few people who are playing that one, and it's a pay to play game plus, you know, obviously in-game transactions as well. But Amazon is giving away, in their gaming division, they're giving away a Twitch Prime sub, which, for those who don't know, if you have an Amazon Prime account, you get an automatic free subscription to any channel every month. And when you do that, it counts just the same as a subscription for the streamer. And so they still end up getting about $2.50. So that's every month. So that is about, what, $30-$35 a year out of your $120 Amazon Prime subscription that they're just handing to someone. If you're using that, not everybody uses it, obviously. And then they're giving away all sorts of free games every month through Good Old Games or some other method, just on the Amazon Games platform. And I would assume, just like any subscription company, they are having to buy rights to give away those games. And sometimes they're really garbage little duds, and other times they're like, oh wow, okay, it's an old game, it's Dishonored, you know, that's an old game now, probably buy it for $5 or $10 on Steam, but it's still, they still had to pay for it to give it away, I would assume. So it's, I'm really curious how their whole gaming division is generating money, because I have Amazon Prime and I utilize those things because I have Amazon Prime. I don't sign up for Amazon Prime because of those things, because I don't think overall they would pay for the subscription. So I'm just curious how Amazon is affording anything else in their game division when they are giving away so much stuff for free, essentially. And again, many, many millions of people subscribe to Amazon Prime, a small portion of them probably actually taking advantage of these things. But I don't know. It's interesting. Dave, I know you've been in and out. You're just like every subscription, you sign up for Amazon Prime when you need it and then cancel it when you don't. But I don't know. Does that affect their overall game, you know, sector?
I think so. The thing is I think their whole gaming involvement in the gaming business is so much in its infancy that it probably isn't really making the money just yet. But they do have successes, like you mentioned, such as, you know, New World, Lost Ark, and stuff like that. Also interesting, all of their games pretty much are MMOs. That just seems to be kind of what they do.
Right.
But these game related events and whatever these people were doing as part of Amazon Gaming, it seemed like a non-direct revenue generator, and it probably was an initiative that had a fairly short leash. Whereas, you know, if this doesn't start generating a net positive over, you know, 16 months or something, then we're cutting loose. So I don't know. I assume most of this is being subsidized by Amazon's other business, of which they are printing money. But you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people out there don't know the benefits. And I only just recently learned about the games that you get with Amazon Prime. Like, I didn't know that before. But they're building something here. And just like PS Plus, you know, 2 years ago, it starts small. And after a while, suddenly it's a really good deal. So I think that's the direction that Amazon is going. And they have more than enough money to play with to get themselves there. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And hopefully, you know, more people don't lose jobs, but also that's just how business works, and it sucks. But moving on, this one is not really news as much as I just wanted to talk about this subject. Half-Life in general. Valve is celebrating the 25th anniversary of Half-Life with various promotions and updates. A new update for the original game includes multiplayer maps, restored content, graphics options, and full compatibility with the Steam Deck. To mark the occasion, Half-Life is temporarily free to keep on Steam, and other games in the franchise are discounted. By the way, I think I saw the orange box on Steam. I think I it was like $1.99. I already had everything in it, so I didn't buy it, but if you don't have everything in it, $1.99 is a pretty dang good deal. Half-Life is temporarily free to keep on Steam, and other games in the franchise are deeply discounted. Additionally, Valve has released a documentary featuring the original development team sharing memories of creating the iconic game. Despite ongoing speculation, there hasn't been any active development on Half-Life 3, with Valve reportedly focusing on Steam Deck-friendly titles. Have either of you played Half-Life? Okay, Brandon, this is your second strike this episode. Be careful. For the rest of the episode, you don't get another one. But Dave, tell me about Half-Life. What was your experience with Half-Life? I just wanted to talk about the game.
Fond memories of Half-Life. I had a close friend growing up who he and his brothers were big into magic. And I think his parents came across some money one day and decided that they were going to try to turn their kids' love of magic into a business. So they opened up like a card shop that had like a whole bunch of tables for people to play magic and other games, but they also had a whole bunch of like computers set up, and that was around the time Half-Life was big. So I would like hang out with him in the summer at his parents' store and just play Half-Life, and they kind of got grumpy because normally you have to pay to play the games on their computers, and I was their son's friend. So but yeah, I have pretty fond memories of Half-Life. Just swinging that crowbar around was so fun, and I don't know. I just really like the feel of it. And it was kind of like, it felt like a more sophisticated Doom, which was my other reference point when it came to first person shooters. And then Half-Life 2, the orange box was probably one of the best games I've ever purchased in terms of, you know, pound for pound package. Played through the orange box in university on my Xbox 360. Loved Portal, loved Episode 2, all that stuff. So yeah, I really like Half-Life, and I'm really sad that it's the 25th anniversary of the Half-Life franchise, and if we're not getting a Half-Life 3 announcement on the 25th anniversary, then I think we never are. And I always kind of wonder, like, did the storefront kill Half-Life 3? Mm. If so, why did they make Alex? It's such a mystery. Like, it seems like Valve had every intention of making Half-Life 3, and it just, I don't know.
It seems like they're clearly on the hardware trajectory at this point, obviously with the Steam Deck being pretty huge and successful and profitable by all accounts. And I think they made Alex to showcase the Valve Index that they made, which I don't think has been as large of a success as the Steam Deck. And then before that, they made the Steam Link. And all of these are just ways for you to, like, there are things for you to purchase, which probably makes them a little bit of money, but the Steam Deck alone, I know there are people who have never touched a PC, but now they're buying games on on Steam. And there are plenty of people who are PC gamers, and now they're more willing to buy another game that they wouldn't normally buy because they can play it on their couch or play it at grandma's house on Thanksgiving or whatever. So it seems like they're becoming more hardware focused. And I think you're right that we might not ever get a Half-Life 3. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk about GTA 6 right now and an incoming announcement and a reveal of it or whatever, and that being one of the biggest games to ever exist. And I think that's true. I think it might, by numbers, end up being the biggest game that ever exists. But Half-Life 3, if it was good, would probably blow it out of the water. I don't know about actual acquisition numbers of the game, like people buying it, but I think the chatter would be crazier than GTA 6 would ever be. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part, but it'll be interesting. My experience, I remember playing, I got a whole like CD set of all the Half-Life games, or of Half-Life 1 and the expansions. And I remember playing it at my grandma's house on my dad's Sony Vaio, because I got it right before we went on a trip to my grandma's house. And I was playing on my dad's Sony Vaio, and I had to run the phone cord from her kitchen to her living room so I could plug in the laptop to play the game. And each of the CDs came with, like, it was the CD, but then it also had a key with it. And I remember being really irritated that I had to go and download this stupid client named Steam in its infancy, and then redeem these codes, because I was like, I have the disc. Why do I have to redeem them on this stupid website? And so some things, I mean, I've not been as resistant to new storefronts since then, but I remember back when that came out, that was a very popular opinion, that Steam was garbage because you had to download something else to play a game. So now I'm like, whatever, Epic Game Store, bring it on. I don't care. But anyway, Half-Life 2, phenomenal. Brandon, to bring you in on this, I think it's dated now, and I think that some of that's apparent. But with as big of a first-person shooter, first-person games in general person as you are, and as someone who loves so many things that have been directly influenced by Half-Life, I think you got
to
play it.
Yeah, I might have to check it out. There's no doubt that I've heard the praises of this game. Knowing myself, though, I don't know that it will be enough. But I certainly would be willing to give it a try. I think that...
It's, I think, not very long.
Of all old games, I would be most intrigued by the idea of playing a first person shooter. So,
yeah, couple things in chat here. Campo Santo was making a version of Half-Life 3, but got scared and pivoted to Alex. Yes, that's true. And I think that at Valve, they're allowed to work on whatever they want if they get enough of a group. And I think Half-Life 3 is one of those things that's like, do you really want to work on one of the most desired games ever, knowing that if it flops, your name is basically mud? Dave is laughing and I'm holding off laughter because someone, and I know who this is, but someone named Hulk Hogan just entered into the chat and said in all capital letters, "Well, let me tell you something, brother.
You better play Half-Life 1 and 2, brother. Let me tell you something. It's the greatest shooter to ever exist."
Brandon, what if I play Nier in 2024 and you play Half-Life?
Brandon doesn't care.
I can't sign up for any more bets this year.
It's not a bet. It's just like a, it's like a, it's like a friendship.
It is a bet because I don't think I'm going to play it.
Why aren't you going to play Half-Life, bro?
It's just maybe. Anything's possible. Anything is possible. New year, new me. You know that saying, new year, new me. It might be the Half-Life year.
I don't understand any resistance to it because it is one of the greatest games ever made.
Brandon,
he didn't have to buy it. We can Steam. I'll buy it. Yeah, whatever. It's like $2. It's free on Steam right now. He doesn't have to buy it.
I think that when I play games that I instantly from my gut don't want to play, that I never enjoy playing them.
Okay, but why don't you want to play it?
I don't have a good reason. I really don't. Wow. I might play it. I might play it just to spite you guys, because you guys think that I can't.
I'm going to pay full price for it.
Suck Gabe's dick, and then I'm going to play it.
I'm going to suck you, Gabe's dick, brother.
Stinky Gabe needs to bring in Jack.
Please don't do that.
Dude, Hulk's going crazy. He's a Hulkamaniac in the chat. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. Ed says, owning anything over a 1050 Ti means you have to play the Half-Life games. I'm pretty sure I played that on I know I played that on a Sony Vaio 1997 integrated graphics card. I don't know if it. He also says, also, I am an illegal. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but now he's on record saying it. All right, boys, it's time to talk about what we've been playing. Brandon and I, you and I share a title, and because of your moving situation, it's the only title I think you've been able to play. But tell me about your experience this week in Fortnite OG, and I will chime in.
Fortnite OG. I'm back playing Fortnite again. I can't fucking believe I'm saying this. For a while, it was Destiny, like the game that kept coming back up over and over again. But Fortnite is the same thing, man. And I keep going back. And do you know what the funniest part of it is? Is I'd say about half the time when I go back to Destiny, I have fun for more than like a couple hours. Fortnite, I almost always have fun when I go back. I don't know what it is, man. I don't know what it is. I'm having a ton of fun playing Fortnite OG. It might be because we're fucking getting them dubs. Over and over. We got 4 wins last night in one night. Mm-hmm. 4 victory royales.
In like 2 hours.
My man. And, you know, nobody come at me in the chat. It's of course it's zero build. We're old men at this rate. We don't need to be competing with people who can't grow mustaches, okay? So, you know, zero build is the way to go. I'm having a ton of fun with it. It is really cool to be back on the original map. Many, many good memories. It's not the OG map. It's called the OG map, but we were playing before OG. We were a part of the Founders Edition. We had Epic send us back when it was just Save the World. I remember.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And
I literally played the Battle Royale on day one, like of the first day it existed. So.
It was so different. No, it's really cool. And I think you're having quite a bit of fun. Having wins certainly doesn't make the situation worse. But yeah, just all in all, just super cool to see the old map with all the new mechanics. Because that's the thing about it, too, is it's like they didn't just put the map in, right? It's in Unreal Engine 5, and you can still slide and mantle and the 9 yards. So. Really, really cool. It just feels like an updated something that I remembered. So,
sure. It's definitely scratching an itch. And I don't know if it's because it's Fortnite and it's a good game. And I, even though I trash on Fortnite all the time and have for years, even when I was enjoying it before, and I still trash on it still, I will go on record and say I think it is one of the best modern shooters ever made. It is just basically flawless in its execution of everything it does, bar none. It's a phenomenally made game. And yeah, the tie-ins are trashy and I hate them. And the culture around it sucks, but the game itself
and it works
is a
well
good game.
All the time.
It just works. Just works, just like Todd Howard said it would. And it's interesting because used to when we played, you know, years ago, there were no bots. We never saw a bot. They didn't exist in the game. And then, you know, there was a lot of concern over it when they started adding in bots. But when we drop in lately, very often we're dropping in with like another team or two and they're bots and we kill them immediately. And it's like, yeah, I got some kills, even though they're bots. And the AI is pretty good most of the time, but some of the time they're just swinging a pickaxe at a wall while there's 14 people shooting them. And so that's a little weird. But generally what happens is you kill a few bots and then you find the real players. Like all the bots die out immediately and then you get a few players. Brandon, that last night after you hopped off, I played a couple more games with your brother. And Cam and I were playing and literally we had like 15 or 17 kills. And it was down to the last 10 people, the last circle. And everyone who was left was like a uber sweat real player. And there were no more bots, but we had so many bots up until that point that I was like unprepared for a real team. And so you just go in and you're like, whatever, we're kicking ass this round. And then you just get melted because you like weren't in that mindset. And so I think the bots are a good addition, especially to fill lobbies and stuff so they don't feel dead. But when you get a lobby and you hop in and before the first circle even starts to close, you're already down to 50 out of the 100 players on the map. That's a little concerning to me. Like that, it just, at that point, you're like, okay, they should put more real players in here. Clearly, they have the player base for it. It's not like they're hurting for people to play the game right now. So that's one of my, I like the feeling of like, just you're running around killing bots, but yeah, I don't know. I'm a little confused about the bot situation personally, but I'm having a lot of fun with it regardless. Alex Dice Twice says, I see that Brandon is the brain rot specialist of this podcast. Alex, you and I have shared our opinions on many, many games over the years in Discord. And, you and I share many of the brain rot things. Brandon is the specialist, but I am his backup when it comes to Fortnite, for sure. For those who don't know, Brandon and I and Dustin used to have a podcast all about Fortnite, and it hit the top of the iTunes charts for many weeks in a row. So, you know, we might have created some of the
brain rot. This shit ain't nothing to us, man.
This shit ain't nothing to me, man. That might have been like 2018, actually. 2017, even. I don't know. It was a long time ago. And then Radic says, it's insane how Fortnite is old enough to be nostalgic about it. Absolutely. And Brandon said something last night that I thought was pretty observant. He said, with the success of Fortnite OG, I'm pretty sure they're going to bring back Verdansk in Warzone. Even though that's only like 3 or 4 years old, there's nostalgia for Verdansk.
Dude, already. They have to. 44 million players in a day. Yeah. They can't be seeing those numbers and thinking, wow, we could do something like this. Especially with the new campaign. Yeah. They have a lot of the POIs already in the new shit. So,
right. Dave, when are you going to play Fortnite with us?
I don't think I'm there yet, aww, boys. Let's get Nier out of the way. Let's start there. And then maybe I'll think about Fortnite.
Fair enough. And then you can play Nier. Brandon can play Half-Life. And then we'll all play Fortnite together.
Sounds good.
Okay. Dave, tell me about your lineup here.
Yeah, so I've continued on playing Metroid Dread. I'm loving this game. I'm just over halfway through it, and I'm already kind of sad that it's going to end soon. I don't know what it is about it. It's just so satisfying kind of working your way through an area and finding a new upgrade and like playing around with it and being like, oh, shit, now I can go back and do this, this, and this. And I think that's just a cool feeling. And having it in a 2D side-scrolling package that's like a really high-quality package is a great thing, and I'm really liking that. With that said, I am confident now in saying that I'm on team fuck Emmys. They're just not fun. They're not cool. I don't know if they're supposed to be scary, but they're just annoying. And like when you finally unlock the ability in each area to kill the Emmy, you have to go through this really annoying like shooting mini game that is just not fun. But with that said, even with how annoying the Emmys are, it's I'm still really, really having a great time with Metroid Dread. So I'm glad I finally pulled the trigger on it. The other thing I've finally been playing is Mario Wonder. I've got it in the mail last week, and I've been playing quite a bit through the weekend. I don't really have anything new to say that you haven't already said, Ben. It's just such a fun, creative, and like delightful game. That's the word that I've been using with some friends, is like, play this game. It's just delightful, and it's not even nostalgic, like it is, but it's just so great to like jump in a level and like you could, you know, be a decent way through into the game and you're seeing something completely new, a new idea, a new sort of platform and mechanic that you're using. So it's great. I love that like you get the elephant like early on and you have to like squirt all over people and you're collecting, like you're building up your supply of seeds and spreading your seeds all around the kingdom and stuff. And it's just like, and the wonder flowers is like, you guys cannot convince me that someone didn't like look at a level and be like, guys, here's what I think. What if we did this level, but you're on LSD? That's what these fucking wonder flowers are. It's just like a complete trip. And like, there's so much of that in this game. But in any case, yeah, I'm really liking Mario Wonder. I said some pretty untoward things about the 2D crop of Mario games, and I'd like to take them all back because I think I'm having a better time with this than I was with Odyssey. just because it's a little bit more focused. As I said, I'm playing it like you are, Ben, where I'm not moving to a new level until I've gotten everything in the previous level. But I know for a fact when I get to the part of the game when the majority of the levels are like 4 and 5 star levels, 5 star difficulties, I'm going to say fuck this, because I know it's going to get like Crash Bandicoot hard. Maybe not that hard, but in any case, yeah, I'm having a really good time with Mario Wonder. And yeah, some good Switch days for me lately. That's for sure. Yeah,
nice. I've been spending literally, so I platinumed Alan Wake 2 last week, the night before the show, I think. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to devote time to Mario Wonder right now. Because for some reason, I have this thing in my head where I'm like, well, any game on a Switch has to be my secondary game. Well, right now, it's my primary game. I don't know why I have that thought in my head, but I do. And so I've only been playing Fortnite and Mario Wonder, and mostly Mario Wonder. And at this point, Dave, I have 100%ed every stage and every world except for the very, very secret last one. And it's not really a secret, but basically once you 100% everything else and you get everything possible, you open up one more world. And I won't say exactly what this world is for those who may not want to know. But it is balls difficult. Part of it is that there are very few checkpoints and the level is incredibly long. Showcases many of the features throughout the game. So even after 100%ing everything, getting every blue check mark on every level, getting every blue check mark on every world, getting everything, I have spent somewhere between 175 and 225 lives on this last level.
See, I don't want to get to a point where I hate it.
I don't hate it.
But because, for I would hate that. I don't have that persistence, but
well, now it's a matter of I'm going to beat this and no one is going to convince me otherwise. The problem is because the checkpoints are so far apart. So you run up, you get a checkpoint, and then you have several more portions of that level to go, and then until you get another checkpoint. So if it takes you a long time in between those levels, you run out of lives, and eventually, it's a game over, even though technically it just means you don't have that checkpoint anymore. So you have to start over. And the game actually gives you the option after you have cleared the whole game and unlocked that world. Maybe it does it before that, but I didn't notice it, to buy 100 lives specifically for that challenge. And so I've done that twice now. And I have gotten to the point where I have seen the flag at the end of this ultimate crazy challenge level 3 times. I've seen it. And the level is like, I watched a speed run just like after I had done this 100 times, just to make sure I wasn't missing something. I watched somebody do a speed run. And they finished it. It took a speedrunner like 7 minutes to do it. And I am nowhere near a speedrunner. And I died a lot of times and, whatever. And I'm also collecting all the important stuff along the way. So this level, like if you have to start at the beginning to get all the way to the end, let's say you don't die. If you're a speedrunner and you're amazing, it's still going to take you like potentially 10 minutes. So it is to the point where I am so stubborn that I have Mario RPG sitting right there. I bought it on Saturday. It's sitting there. It is still in the package because I refuse to start playing a new game anywhere until I 100% Mario Wonder, including the ultimate special final test, whatever it's called. Final. It plays a trick on you. I mean, it's not really a trick. It's see-through, but so that's where I'm at. And I am so tense just thinking about it, but I love it. I still do love it. It's this actual real challenge. And the part I'm at, there is no way to make it easier on yourself. There's no hacks. There's no like special tricks. You just got to do it. And it's rough. So that's what I've been playing. Guys, we're going to get out of here. But before we do, remember, go over to patreon.com/handsomephantom. Sign up to support us. Go over to handsomephantom.com/discord. We appreciate that. And if you haven't already, if you're in here in the live chat right now, there's a little thumbs up button on the video you can give. Go ahead and click that like button, the like, the thumbs up, whatever. Just do it. I don't even know if it impacts an algorithm or anything. I just want you to do it to make me feel better and to make us feel better. We're going to talk for just a couple minutes here after the show. If you're an audio listener, we appreciate you. We'll see you next time. And if you're a video viewer, hope you stick around for a few minutes to hang out with us. Thanks for listening and watching, everyone. And have a great week. The HP Podcast is made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following patrons are at the $5 level or above: Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Jared, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels, Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Rainick, Christian Snow, Gravalicious, Benji Bop, and Johnny Waffles.